And so now I'd like to introduce Kurt Covington, who is Senior Vice President and Credit Risk Manager for Ag and Rural Banking Division at the Bank of the West in Fresno, California. And he's got 28 years of experience in ag banking and is responsible for managing the risk of a $3.2 billion agriculture agribusiness loan portfolio. In addition, Kurt is an adjunct faculty at the Department of Agricultural Economics at Cal State University and actually runs a school which will be starting next week. The name slips me right now. But anyway, if you want to read more about Kurt's background, you can go on to our website. But Kurt, I'm going to turn this over to you for the next 15 minutes or so.
Okay, great. Can everybody hear me? Good. Well, I appreciate Jay's comments. I'm going to move as quickly as I can. I do agree with much that Jay has commented on. I did want to go to my first slide here and just kind of talk about some macro issues here, and at least from the perspective of gross domestic product. And as you can see, one of the issues is that since 2007, we saw a collapse of real growth in GDP, which is an indication that, and at least from the perspective of agricultural lending and from the perspective of any farmer that might be on the line listening today, you know, this is a reflection that with a worsening economy, people are going to have less discretionary income. And the next slide that I have up here, which is the personal consumption, would also tell you the same thing. Interestingly enough, you can see what happened in 2008, that we went from a high of about 3% in personal consumption down to a minus 4% in 2008, and it hasn't returned significantly through the first part of 2009. So when it comes to real consumption, what we're saying here is, if you take inflation out of the way, are people spending more money? Well, I think most of us would agree that people are, there's a lot of products in agriculture that are, as from an economic perspective, I guess, are inelastic. That is, regardless of what the price of it is, we're going to buy it. A lot of people, for example, that I want to lay a point out here right now is a lot of people see milk, for example, and it's to follow up on what Jay said, that milk is tend to thought of to be as an inelastic product. I was on a conference call last week, and interestingly enough, milk was a product that was actually fairly elastic, meaning that people were willing to spend more money on bottled water that they would in times like this choose to buy bottled water and soda before they would buy milk. The next slide. Talking about rising commercial real estate delinquencies, I think this just kind of gives an idea of what's going on in the real estate market. And what's going on in construction development for commercial banks, this pretty well tells you what commercial banks are going through. There is a crisis in commercial banking today. There is not necessarily a crisis in agricultural lending today, but there is certainly a crisis that has hit the commercial banks. And really, that just simply, for the most part, is in the construction and development area. Next slide. There was a question asked about farm real estate values. From the USDA, you can see there's been a significant run-up in real estate farm values over the last 3 or 4 years. Most of that, interestingly enough, has not happened out west. Price farm values out west, particularly in California, have been high for a long, long time. But through the Midwest, with its ethanol run-up, there have been some properties out in the Midwest that we finance that we've seen the values go from anywhere from $500 or $1,500 at the high end all the way up to $8,000 an acre in a 24-month period of time. And that is a serious concern to most ag lenders, we'll talk about later. This just basically is just an overview of information you can derive from the FDIC. And it talks about farm real estate concentrations. You can see that from this slide, going from 2001-2008, the amount of farm loans relative to the equity capital of banks, there's this concern that that there's an over-concentration of agricultural real estate credit in commercial banks. This really is not the case. as we move to the next slide, you can see that the risk exposure to farmland is pretty much minimal. And a lot of the information for 2009 is not available, but I think you'd find out as well that, that it's still the case in 2009. So what does this say? It's, you know, are commercial banks still lending money? Without, like farm credit, without a doubt, there is money available. Has there been any issues with commercial banks and risk to their agricultural portfolio? No. Where most of it is, has been centered, obviously, is in commercial real estate, retail properties, and construction and development. Bank lending continues to grow. C&I, which is referred to as commercial industrial, which would include ag, by the way, continues to be fairly steady, and this is for commercial banks. You can see consumer lending back through 2008 continued to grow. In fact, spiked up at the end of towards the end of 2008. I think this maybe is the most interesting slide because there's some misconceptions out there about bank loans to farms. Now, this is again referring to commercial banks, and it's not a whole lot different than what Jay would see inside the farm credit system. Whatever color you'd like to call that, the blue line would represent the increase in farm loans, farm loans in terms of billions of dollars back in 2005 through 2009. And next to that, the purple or magenta, I suspect, is the farmland values that have increased over that same period of time with the trend lines attached. So the misconception out there that ag banks, and that includes farm credit, and major agricultural commercial banks, which we are one, that we're not lending money is clearly not the case. This next slide may not mean a whole lot to anybody that, that is sitting out on a farm or ranch right now, but there's this misconception of where commercial banks get their money. The interesting part about that is most commercial banks are getting their money from other commercial banks. We do not get it necessarily from any government source. Our bank is not a TARP recipient bank. We are we did not take any TARP money. We didn't need any TARP money. But bottom line is, most of our money is borrowed between banks, and that's referred to as most banks borrow between themselves under something called LIBOR, and you guys have probably heard a lot about that. It's basically simply an interbank offering rate between banks that says, hey, Bank A or Bank B or Bank of the West, you want to borrow money from us? Here's the rate you're going to pay. So we are simply customers of other banks, and other banks are customers of ours. When the credit crisis hit in late 2006, we could have borrowed from other banks in the what was referred to as LIBOR rate, which is basically 0.5%, for example. So what would be referred to as 50 basis points. And maybe with a slight premium on top of that. Within a 7-day period of time, that went to LIBOR plus 600%. So what happened was is that banks between themselves were uncertain about the health of the other banks that they were lending to. Therefore, they were out of the market. So I'll finish up my discussion here by talking about what I think are the big credit issues that we want to discuss here. Without a doubt, the recession has impacted agribusiness. We've always said that agriculture is somewhat immune to recessions. Well, I think we're testing that today. Clearly, the export markets are tighter. Domestic consumption in many sectors of agriculture is down. The next thing I want to point out to anybody that's listening is money is more expensive to rent. If you're going to borrow money from a bank, it's going to cost you more money. The reality of the matter is because the cost of money that we have to rent from other banks and other sources has also gone up. The other thing I would note it here, and I refer to this as the stroke of the pen risk, is more prevalent than ever, and I'll get more into that in a minute. But what I mean by stroke of the pen risk is that government intervention and other stakeholders in agriculture and ag banking are clearly more prevalent today than they were even 5 years ago. I will talk more about that in just a second. Other big credit conditions issues that are affecting agricultural credit, the first thing I would say is this. There seems to be between the borrower and the banks that there's this disconnect between the cost of money and the availability of money. Invariably, people come in and are expecting to borrow at the same rates that they were borrowing at last year or the year before. That's not happening. Lenders are lending money, but the cost to the banks and therefore the cost to the borrowers is going up. Second thing I would say is the borrowers simply are going to pay more for their credit needs. And last, this could be reiterated amongst all really dedicated and pragmatic ag lenders, and that is this, is that in times like these, when relationships that relationships are built, they're not destroyed. So this is not the time for banks, and it's not the time for borrowers to go out on the limb in their borrowing needs. The question was asked also, I think, when I first started talking about joining this conference some 30, 60 days ago, what do you think the single biggest threat to agricultural credit is? And, you know, I would say pick one. But in general, I think I can categorize it by saying this: outside influences. Clearly, government intervention in ag banking, in agricultural and in banking, is more prevalent today than it was even 6 months ago. Second thing that I would say is that there's a well-funded, very well-funded animal welfare advocacy group out there that is intent on endangering the livestock industry, the swine industry, the dairy industry, and the poultry industry. Lastly, I would say that there's well-funded environmental advocates out there as well. And of course, we see that particularly in California. And I think in some cases they're well-intentioned, but the cost to the grower and the cost to the bank is incredibly, to me, it is the biggest threat. The great disconnect, and this goes back to something Jay said. Back in the early 80s, here's what I would say about most lenders, is that we were collateral lenders. If you had the equity in the land, we gave you the money. In the 90s, after the crash of the 80s, we became cash flow lenders. If you could show you could repay the loan, we had the money. Today, where I think we're a little more balanced, all of us, show me you can repay the loan, but don't forget that you need some collateral to make this work. Last, I would say this. The big question is, if you want to become a better manager, I think you need to educate yourself on the things that matter. And in my view, someone asked me one time, would you teach a management class in the ag econ department? I said, yeah, sure, I'll teach a management class. I can do it in one day. And they said, what do you mean? So I showed them this graph, and I said, you know, to me, on the left-hand side is this triangle. And it has the doing, the negotiating, and the deciding. In my view, I think a lot of really poor managers spend most of their time doing. They spend a reasonable amount of time negotiating, and I mean negotiating with their suppliers, negotiating with their families, negotiating with their banks, negotiating in some cases with the government, depending on what the situation is, and they spend very little time deciding. And the reason is because they don't have the knowledge and they fear, because of that, of making the wrong decision. So they spend most of their time doing. I think the really good managers who are growing your organizations take that triangle and they turn it upside down. They spend some amount of time doing. They probably spend the same amount of time negotiating, but they become educated and they spend much greater amount of time making the decisions necessary for that organization to strategically grow. And so I would add these last final bullet points. How can you educate yourself in things that matter? And I would say this: read a daily business journal or a daily business periodical and subscribe to it. And I don't think it should be focused on ag. I think reading the Wall Street Journal, I think reading Business Week, I think reading other general business-oriented publications will give every farmer, every banker, and every business owner a broader view of what's going on out in the marketplace. Second, I would say, study the basics of financial marketing and human resource management. The bottom line is a bad relationship with one employee can take that business down much quicker than a banker can. Third thing I would say is talk to your suppliers, talk to your bankers, and talk to other business owners about their best practices. Finally, I would say take advantage of free resources, just like this one.
From your perspective, what are the main qualities that you think lenders should be looking for in terms of evaluating current or prospective customers in these times?
You know, that's a great question, and I would say this, it's interesting because I worked Farm Credit for a long period of my life. I think one of the things I learned there and one of the things that I've carried over to Bank of the West is simply this, is that I don't think you can discount character. When times get tough, you're going to really see what your borrower is made of. Are they upfront with you? Have they told you everything that is going on inside their operation? Do they see you as a valued financial partner in that relationship, or do they see you as a necessary evil? And I say that with all due respect, because we've all been through it. And I think for those that are listening, I think some of you probably see your bank as a necessary evil. On the other hand, there are probably many of you that see your banker as a valued resource. The character that you bring to that relationship is just as important as the quality of the financial statements, the quality of the collateral you bring, without a doubt in my mind.
Kurt, your set of triangles at the end were very instructive. Difference doing and deciding. And one of our participants out there has asked the question that farmers are farmers because they love doing. And what ideas do you have for the educators in the crowd to help challenge farmers to be more about the whole around decisions and decision making? Advice for us?
You know, and let me preface this quickly simply by saying that like Jay, we finance into 20 different segments throughout our footprint, which is 19 Western states, that amounts to about 200 different crops. One of the things we've found is this, is that the difference between farming today and farming, 15 years ago, is that today you have got to be a better financial manager and a better marketer. You cannot simply take those two things for granted. You can't expect that your bank is going to continue to operate as they may have operated 20 years ago. Your organization may have grown, and I can tell you clearly, all the markets in which we finance into, all the markets have changed significantly in terms of how those products are marketed. So I would say this, if you're sitting there simply putting your shovel in the dirt, which is, look, I come from a farm family, it's important, but even if you're small, it is critically important for all of you that are out there, and I know who's Bob Craven, and all you guys, it's important to get in front of the small and moderate-sized farmers, or those farmers that are trying to strategically grow their business and say, hey, look, you know, what's important here is that you're a good farmer. But what's just as important today is that you can push the pencil on the finances and train. What are some of the critical tools you can use financially other than just the preparation of an annual financial statement? What are some of the things we can use? Break-even analysis, variable cost budgeting. And then that last thing is, you know, what are the available marketing opportunities for my crop? How can I get greater margins out of my crop? There are ways. It's happening. You see it in the market today. We've got growers that are selling on the internet today.
Just one last question, and then Kurt will be around for questions at the end. And I would say several of you have sent in questions that your sound cut out or something, and you missed Kurt's part of his presentation. I'll just tell you, it's all going to be up on our website. We'll give you the address at the end here. His slide presentation is up there now, so that you could go and look at that. And but one of the questions, Kurt, maybe you could just add a bit, was you talked about the differences between collateral lending, cash flow lending, and what you're doing now. Could you just describe a bit more about what's different today than those two, the way you operated
Sure.
in the past?
I don't think anybody that lent in the early 80s would argue with me with what I'm about to say here. In the 80s, we're seeing, I hope history is not repeating itself, but to me, you see a lot of the same patterns happening. Land values were increasing. Banks were willing to go out on the edge or willing to go out on the limb and lend against collateral values. The idea being is saying, okay, you know, someone wants to borrow against the value of that real estate, and if for some reason they were unable to make they went into default on that loan, they were unable to pay it, that there's this market out there for the sale of that real estate and will get paid back. That's a true collateral lender. We never really focused heavily on cash flow. We never really spent a whole lot of time focusing on character, to be honest with you. But we were true collateral lenders, as if there was no end to the rise in these real estate values. And if we have to get out, we can get out through the sale of that property. The borrower can. Well, we found out what happened in the 80s that unfortunately, we the bankers learned our lesson, as did the borrowers. And so what happened in the early 1990s, everybody started looking at, as a result of having cleared out their portfolios and gotten their balance sheet righted, was, hey, look, it doesn't make any difference what that collateral is. We got to be able to prove that this operation can pay its own bills and provide enough of a return to the farming operation. And if it can do that, then collateral really becomes a secondary issue. We don't want to be in a position that we got ourselves in the 80s. We want to rely as best we can on the ability to repay this loan. Today, I think we're a little more balanced. There's a lot of businesses that are strategically growing. They're moving into other sectors. They're vertically integrating. They're horizontally integrating. Sometimes you have to rely a little bit on collateral of another operation to support the growth of a vertical a segment of their business or horizontal segment of their business. And so we are kind of taking a flyer on deals like that. The bottom line is we still are looking at cash flows today. I just think we're a little more balanced in looking at both the ability to repay the loan and what is the quality of the collateral being offered to support it.
Great. Thanks, Kurt. And as I say, Kurt will be here to answer some questions later as well.